Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal presents the number 21 tape in this series of vital and intense interest to every Christian. Your speaker will be Mr. Raymond Cole.
I'm taking a lot of time in this subject because it is something we're all going to encounter or are encountering even at the present time. It's a very serious and a very sobering subject. It isn't something that we can escape. It is not some information that is removed because it is not applicable to us. It is going to form an indigenous part of our lives. We're going to experience it. And as a result of the stimuli of those things which we experience, we're going to effect certain changes or certain modal patterns of life. And only if we correctly evaluate those conditions and circumstances which are transpiring in our lives and make the necessary moves, are we going to be found in conformity with the will and the purpose of God. Now, many things, well, let's say all things, are allowed and expressly permitted by God. Remember the one problem that Cain had was in understanding why he should experience certain things. And he came back on God and said, "But you made me this way." God said, "I know that. But I made you to overcome that nature. I gave you that nature that was adverse, contrary, rebellious, disobedient, cantankerous, and that manifested every other form of defiance or rebellion. I gave it to you. I created you thusly. But I did not create you with the intent that you should subscribe to it. I told you what it was, and then I told you to overcome it, to master it." So what we have to recognize, brethren, is that the trials, the experiences, the difficulties we are encountering are as a result of two things. One, our natures which we possess, and two, our relationships with other people who possess the same natures. So we cannot look to somebody else and say, "Well, if he had not done so and so, I might have been able to have done a better job. Or I might have manifested better faith. If he hadn't torn down my love and respect for God, if he hadn't destroyed my faith, if he hadn't troubled and perplexed me, I might have been tall and faithful and firm in my resolve." We cannot use any such justification. Because God is the one who has expressly allowed and permitted all these things, plus being the one who made us subject to them. So we are going to suffer pains, anxious moments, difficulties, unique problems in our lives, because God intends that we should manifest the character and nature He possesses despite those adversities. For God is not subject to them. Remember what James said? God cannot be held accountable for these things because He is not subject to them. He can't be tempted with them. You and I are tempted because of the nature with which we were born. What temptation? The temptation to give up. The temptation to retaliate. The temptation to belittle, to criticize, to bemoan, to complain. What we have to do, brethren, is to recognize those proclivities and then resist the temptations. God does not want us to subscribe to the natural stimuli. We must manifest the ability to withstand such temptations, to manifest the character of Jesus Christ despite the physical and tangible influences. That's what God wants out of us. So we cannot look to these situations, to the physical relationships, to the problems of the flesh and of our own minds, and say, that's fine, God. If you hadn't made me thusly, if you had only taken care of so-and-so over there, I wouldn't have had any problem. It won't justify you. Because the only time you prove that you are a servant of God is when you lift yourself up by the help of God. Well, not that you can do it yourselves. When you allow God to lift you up above your natural self to do that which is contrary to the natural stimuli. And then you manifest the will and the purpose of God. In this, to pick up now where we left off, we've been discussing this matter of the fate of the enemies of God's people. Well, we completed that. Rather, we have come down now to the seventh subtopic, which is the affliction can come from God, and it tells us why. Difficulties can come directly from God. He's going to try us. He's going to put us under the gun, create unique circumstances or situations just to see what we do. So when we finally are subjected to those crucial circumstances, we're at the crossroads of life, we are confronted with unique problematic issues, unique to perhaps ourselves, it is at that time and that time only that we produce the real character of God, providing we understand, we withstand the natural stimuli, we stand tall and firm in our resolve, we do not subscribe to what the natural temptation would dictate. Then we produce the character of God, because we're not subject to those things. You see, God, well, we are subject to them, but we have withstood them. The day of release is coming when we are no longer going to be subject to them. They're no longer going to exert any influence in our lives, but the influence is intended and purposed by God at the present time. Because we have to withstand it. And then the day of release is going to come. And I'm looking forward to that day when you lay this, or we all lay that nature down, when no longer are we going to encounter the stunning, terrifying temptations that get us day by day. Our own natural minds, our own flesh natures, those things that absolutely beat us, you know, and whip us in the breeze of society, and the troublous billowing waves of our circumstances. And we're beaten by those things. We are constantly battered We are constantly subjected to those unusual experiences and difficulties. And day in and day out, you're having to go back before God and apologize and say, please forgive me. I stand as a stinking, wretched wretch before you because I failed again. But the day is going to come, brethren, when you're not going to have to do that. When that nature is going to be laid down, that mind is going to have been completely changed, and when you're no longer subject to those temptations and those unique weaknesses or problems. And I want to tell you, if there is anything for which I look, that is it. I'm not going to be plagued with this wretched mind. That if it would do any good, brethren, I could cry out day and night to get rid of it. A mind that just seems it's almost impossible to keep under control. No, I know what the Bible says. But you know, almost the instant or immediately after you make the resolve that you're never going to say anything adversely about any human being again, about the very next second somebody comes along and says something and you don't want to appear to be different. You ever have that problem? We don't have any right to denigrate and to belittle and to talk about others. I get so sick and tired of it. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about this nature. But I have upon me a spiritual obligation to tell you also. But not to censor you or correct you. That's your responsibility individually. And we do it constantly. That's why I've said, brethren, I have the firmest hope and somehow the firmest feeling that we're going to be given the finest. And I don't want it to become a mere trite expression, because I really believe if we fulfill our purpose and do what is incumbent upon us, that we're going to have the finest manifestation of God's active intervention that we have ever in our lives experienced at the Feast of Tabernacles this year. We'd better be prepared, because we're down at the crossroads. When we don't have any right to get upset because our relationships did not work exactly like we wanted them. Now, isn't that too bad? Because maybe they didn't work like the other person wanted them either. But you know, we couldn't care less how it worked out for somebody else. Not at that moment. Oh, because we're called and converted of God, you know, a few minutes later we get to thinking back on it and think, I wonder what the other party thought of us. We have the glorious opportunity, brethren, of living fully those principles. I want to cover them over there, it's hard not to get into it because I've already spent so much time in preparation, you know, and I want to get into them so desperately. But brethren, that's what our trials are all about. That's why we're experiencing these things. So, the affliction can come from God if there's a particular weakness or a particular need that manifests itself in your lives, then God is going to allow, or He may directly and purposefully bring to pass some difficult situation in your lives. He may allow it, or He may directly bring it to pass. So we had already completed the earlier part of this particular word that we're covering, and we're down now to this point number 7, having covered the first 4 basic texts that I have on that subject itself. Let's get in now to the next text, which is Isaiah 30, and let's begin in verse 18:20. Isaiah, the 30th chapter. And let's begin in verse 18. And therefore will the Lord wait, that He may be gracious unto you, and therefore will He be exalted, that He may have mercy upon you. For the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for Him. For the people shall dwell in Zion, The people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. Thou shalt weep no more. He will be very gracious unto thee at the voice of thy cry. When he shall hear it, he will answer you. And though the Lord give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not thy teachers be removed. So here now illustrates an example, or is an example, an illustration of a responsibility to be born in the kingdom after the coming of Jesus Christ, where Christ is going to be right there present, and those that will have been afforded the right to sit with him upon his throne, as those who overcame, as those who have mastered the responsibility that God placed upon them, spiritual responsibility that is, and are finally afforded the privilege of being born into that glorified divine family, now exercising their spiritual responsibility incumbent upon them, teachers of somebody. And he says, yet shall not your teachers, you, brethren, if you qualify, if you understand the purposes, if you fulfill the will of God, if you master and perfectly overcome, shall not your teachers, that is the people over in the millennium, who live on through the Holocaust of the last days, who do not die in the terrifying plagues of these last days, and there will be several million people, although millions upon millions will die because of the strange tests that are going to be administered and the intervention of God in the days preceding the coming of Jesus Christ. But finally now this Holocaust is past, and those who qualified are born into the glorified divine family of God. They're seated now in their areas of responsibility. They're kings and priests, as we find in Revelation 5 and verse 10, or 3 and verse 21. So they're kings and priests of God, or teachers. They're going to teach those who physically weather the monumental times that lie ahead of us. Yet shall not thy teachers be removed into a corner anymore, but thine eyes shall see thy teachers. That is, no longer is it going to be a matter of faith and the trust that there is somebody spiritually up there, but the real teachers, although born into the glorified divine family relationship of God, are going to be physically manifest. They're going to be seen. They're going to be tangible. They can be, as manifested bodies, seen, but they're not going to be limited to that status. Because they can also move instantaneously from one end of the universe to the other. Awesome capability. But the people that are being taught are going to see their teachers. And thine ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk you in it. When you turn to the right hand and when you turn to the left. The term adversity up here is this word, this tsar that we have been talking about, T-Z-A-H-R. Here in verse 20, and though the Lord give you the bread of adversity. So there are going to be difficulties even over in the millennium. If we carry the full application clear on into its literal time, it's prophetic time. And the water of affliction, yet shall not thy teachers be removed into a corner anymore, but thine eyes shall see thy teachers. So there are going to be difficulties experienced by living humanity in the kingdom. The ones that are going to have laid down all such temptations are those who have now become the teachers. No longer subject to those things. Freedom and rest. The picture, truly, of the Sabbath. And I'll tell you, it's going to be a rest far beyond, I think, what we realize. When you're not going to have that struggling, horrifying, retching of the mind constantly. Struggling against it, fighting against the impulses of this nature. And all that's going to be laid down, and you're no longer going to be subject to it. You're not tempted by it, and therefore you don't tempt anybody. It isn't a matter that somebody else becomes the direct tempter in our case. The nature with which we were born is the culprit. Now we have to master that, and we have to overcome it. So the Lord is going to give then the bread of adversity and the water of affliction. And people are going to experience that even in the millennium. If they're going to experience it at that time, they certainly are experiencing it right now. See, it can come from God. God can allow these things, whether by direct intervention or by express permission. He can use either way. And I don't know that it is essential to determine whether God did it or whether he allowed it. The requirement remains the same anyway. And the necessity is to master it. So when these temptations come along, these difficulties arise in our lives, what it means is that he intends for you to master that temptation, that allurement, the temptation to give up, the temptation to criticize, the temptation to manifest any of the appetites or the characteristics of the flesh or of the mind. And that's what God requires of us. Next, I want us to notice Lamentations, the first chapter. Lamentations, the first chapter. And let's begin in verse 1. Some very interesting, very, very interesting statements here with respect to the woes, the anxieties, and the sufferings of the children of Israel. It's a very interesting book that follows the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah, and then the book of Lamentations, beginning in the first verse of the first chapter. How doth the city sit solitary? In other words, Jerusalem, because we're hearkening back now to the example of ancient Israel. How doth the city sit solitary that was full of people? How is she become as a widow? She that was great among the nations and princess among the provinces. How is she become tributary? In other words, here was a city that God said, because of obedience and because of the express will and the purpose of God, should have been exemplary in all the nations of the world. All eyes would have beheld that city. It wouldn't have been New York. It wouldn't have been London. It wouldn't have been Rome. It wouldn't have been Moscow. It wouldn't have been Berlin. It was Jerusalem. That was the center of attention on the face of all the world. And would have remained so, not as a destitute city, not as a desolate area of the world, not as the center of crime and the capital of desolation, but of beauty, of traffic, of commerce, of everything that was right and acceptable in the sight of God. But now what had she become? She was full of people, all right enough, but she became a widow. Destitute. Suffering want, deprivation, without the necessary provisions of life. Because who is a provider but the husband? Here is one who became a widow. And what do widows go through? They sustain every want. They have to look to somebody else to care for them. And above all, where they have many children, they are indeed handicapped. And she had many children. but she was a widow. She that was great among the nations and princess among the provinces. How is she become tributary? Not only now was she under the adversity of trial and suffering want, but she was now a tributary. They were exacting of her. A widow now that had no means of support, but many children that were her charge, and now subject to penalties. She weeps sore in the night. Her tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, and this was the problem. What they don't understand is that if they don't stand tall, true, and faithful to the one they select for life, in honor, they're going to wind up with nothing. Because let me tell you, lovers are never true and faithful. They're there for one purpose, and that's to take advantage. And when they have exploited, and when they have taken every advantage, do you think they're going to assume responsibility? Not at all. She weeps sore in the night. Why? Her lovers fled. She had no one who cared for her. Or they were all willing to exploit her and to take advantage. And her tears are on her cheeks. She isn't happy. She isn't abundantly satisfied. She is not free, unencumbered with respect to the issues of life. Among all her lovers, she hath none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. That is, quote, friends, unquote. They are become her enemies. Judah is gone into captivity. Now we're talking about a marriage relationship that existed between God of the Old Testament, the one who became Jesus Christ, and that wife of old, Israel, of which Judah was a part. Judah is gone into captivity. That is, she is suffering deprivation, want. She is no longer the recipient of the beneficence of a kind, an affectionate, regarding, and purposeful husband. Now remember, it applies both ways. Because when we're talking about the woman, in this case, we're talking about all human beings. Because all human beings stand in that wifely relationship with Jesus Christ. Judah is gone into captivity because of affliction and because of great servitude. She dwells among the heathen. She finds no rest. All her persecutors overtook her between the straits. The ways of Zion do mourn because none come to the solemn feasts. That is, they're suffering their difficulties because they did not uphold the plans and the purposes of God. They were not faithful to the instructions God, the husband, laid down. They were not faithful to the responsibility that God lays upon a wife. She is now reaping the whirlwind. She is now reaping the consequences of what she sowed. And as I said, remember, we are talking about all human beings because they all stood in that wife relationship. But it does characterize what God expects in a perfect husband-wife relationship. A husband who is a provider, who sets the stage of confidence in a home, who gives cause for the wife to rest and to be at peace, not agitated and troubled and perplexed. That is the perfect example of the wife relationship which characterizes or depicts this Christ church relationship, or in olden times, the relationship of the God of the Old Testament with Israel. The ways of Zion do mourn because none come to the solemn feasts. You know, not only were those feasts a matter of spiritual responsibility, but they gave the beautiful outlet for banqueting, for celebration, the exercise of a responsibility that is absolutely essential in the conduct of the lives of all human beings involved in particular family relationships, specific family relationships. They're absolutely essential. All her gates are desolate. Now, what he is saying is that it became so problematic and so troubling that nobody wanted to be there. Have you ever noted that the kind and the benevolent family, the family that is united, that creates the right atmosphere, is always frequented because other people want to be there? They enjoy living in that circumstance of confidence, buoyance, life, vitality, character. They enjoy it. But have you ever noticed that they avoid certain homes? Now, don't evaluate other people's homes. Just evaluate your own. Do they come because of that buoyancy, because of that life, because of that freedom, that rest, that relaxation, because of that family structure that is indeed characteristic of, or the manifestation of, what God accepts as pleasing to him? But here was a case where no longer were they going over in admiration as God said they would, when all the nations were going to look and they were going to be absolutely dumbfounded at what proceeded out of Israel. The glory, the beauty, the magnanimity, the marvelous characteristics that proceeded from Israel. No longer were they going to be doing that as God said would happen if they were faithful and obedient to him. But what was going to happen? They would avoid her gates. So they weren't going to come anymore. All her gates are desolate. Her priests sigh, which means they're asking. Well, they're not really asking. They're only bemoaning. And there's quite a difference in bemoaning a circumstance and deliberately, intentionally asking why and wanting an answer. Now, herein lies the most unique aspect of trials and tribulations. To bemoan it, to criticize, or as we say in the vernacular, to bellyache, is not going to net any benefit whatsoever. So if we merely sigh, if we criticize, if we complain, if we bellyache about it, we are not going to derive any understanding whatsoever, and the situation will only deteriorate. But what we must do, brethren, is intelligently look to the reasons. We must ask why. For by their fruits you shall know them. That is applicable not only in the spiritual avenue as we know it, but in every other facet of life as well. It applies not only to individuals, but to nations. I wonder why we find so many problems for America today. Maybe somebody at the helm of this country had better begin to ask a few legitimate questions. Because we're reaping the consequence. And we'll never solve an issue until we ask why, and until we are careful in what answers we allow to be precipitated. Her virgins are afflicted, and she is in bitterness. Her adversaries are the chief. Now, this tells you absolutely the whole story right here. In other words, the difficulties, the trials, were reigning supreme. That is not what God intended. The trials should never reign supreme. We should reign. That is, we should understand the reason for which we're experiencing our difficulties, our trials, the problems that we're encountering, and we should exercise the control which God has given to us. Because control has never been given to the circumstances out in this world or to anybody else. The control of your life is yours if you'll exercise it, if you'll take it. So, in this case, because she refused to look down into her life and to ascertain why she was experiencing the difficulties she encountered, because she refused to look and to judiciously evaluate, the problems she encountered were reigning over her. They had free domination, free course. And I want to assure you also, brethren, that problems which we experience, God allows or permits in our lives or expressly brings, will reign unless we recognize the whys, unless we properly evaluate, and we look down into our lives. We're not looking to somebody else. Don't accuse somebody else. Everything that is happening is by the express permission of God. You are encountering exactly what God intended or allowed. And until you face it, till you look at it, it's going to reign in your lives. And when you square yourself and you look at it through the eyes of the truth of Almighty God, the knowledge that God has given to you, and when you are careful and judicious in that evaluation, then you once again can reign, and adversity and trial will not. So let's assume that control that God has given to us. Let's not let circumstances. Let us be sure that we have the absolute control over all those situations. Now, I didn't say that you can block them. I said you have the control over them. God himself has kept the control over whether they come or whether they don't. The only control you have is in whether they're going to dominate you or you're going to dominate them. And that's what he's giving us right here. So we can lament, we can sigh, we can bemoan, we can criticize, we can bellyache, we can do all kinds of things. But it will be of little value, brethren, unless we judiciously evaluate and look to the factors and make the necessary judgments. That's why these things are happening. God is not just a God of misery and wretchedness. God is not a vindictive and hateful God who just loves to see you writhe in anguish and pain. God is allowing these experiences by whatever course and by whatever direction for your good and for your benefit, that you might grow out of them. It is for that same reason, and I've read it to you a number of times heretofore, but if you will remember what he said back in the early part of Isaiah, when finally God just says, what's the use? Why should we try them anymore? Why should we subject them to any more difficulties and problems? You know, they're going to only revolt the more. And so God isn't going to do it. He recognizes that to pour out any more trials and more experiences is absolutely useless for that particular time. And he isn't going to do it. Which means that he's no longer going to work with them for that moment. Now he's going to finally, because he's finally going to break the backs and the wills of everyone, except the absolute incorrigibles, which apparently there are going to be a few of them. But I'll tell you, some people are just pretty hard and stubborn. And they have to go through an awful lot to be brought down to where they look up and say, please, Almighty God, I don't even trust myself anymore. I don't trust the way I think. I don't trust myself. And I have a fear of everything that proceeds out of this mind. And you know, that's what it takes, and then we can be taught. The hardest thing for a human being on the face of this earth is to become really teachable. I have said to various beings, and it isn't because I think I've made it. The only reason I stand before you, and sometimes I feel embarrassed to do it, because I make enough mistakes of my own. But I didn't have anything to do with my own call. And God said, you go out and tell them. Now, because I'm telling you doesn't mean that I've already made it. Please understand that. But I think I have come to hate this nature and this mind with the utmost contempt. There are times when I would do almost anything to see it just plain evaporate. Brethren, we have got to come to the point that we really can look up and say, God, here I am, just plain teach me. And we become responsive. Our backs and our necks are about as rigid and as tough as they can get, for the most part, as human beings. Well, that's what this book of Lamentations is all about. He's giving us an illustration. It's a part of the Bible by which you and I are going to live. So he said in verse 5, and the word adversary here is the same word. Her adversaries are the chief. Her enemies prosper. Now sure, I know this was a physical relationship. But as a nation, the only adversary she could possibly have would have been, human beings within or nations externally. And she had both enemies. Because they were stirred up from within and they had problems from without. So you and I have the same problem. We have a lot of difficulties from within and we have problems from without. Both. For the Lord hath afflicted her for the multitude of her transgressions. But do you think she was going to recognize that? See, God had afflicted her for the multitude of her transgressions. Her children are gone into captivity before the enemy. I want you to note next. In fact, you read the first 22. Actually, it's all of this chapter, I believe. Clear down through verse 22, yes. But I'm going to drop very quickly down to verse 7 now. Jerusalem remembered in the days of her affliction. Now, she did have a slight reflection. She recalled some of her former days. Jerusalem remembered in the days of her affliction and of her miseries all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old. You know, it would seem to me that somehow we, as a church, as a people, we're estranged today, yes, but there still is the church. It would seem to me that they would begin to ask why they're encountering so many problems. And the terrible difficulties they're going through. And you know what absolutely dumbfounded me? I listened to a tape here not long ago. I get them occasionally. Altogether too occasionally. Too many tapes. I can't even listen to all of them. But I was absolutely dumbfounded at what I heard on that tape. The man who was delivering the tape, and I'm not here to personally indict whatsoever, so I will not give a name, said, for the first 30 years, over 30 years of the operation of the church, very nearly 40 years, he said, it was magnificently blessed. Magnificently blessed. But he said, were we right doctrinally? No. No, he said, we were wrong in doctrine. So he said, we changed the doctrine. And he said, were we blessed after we changed the doctrine? He said, no. No. He said, we have suffered nothing but problems since that day. But were we right doctrinally? He said, yes. I have that tape. Those are the very words. All right, if you can't look to the fruits, what are you going to look to? Let's notice what he said once again. Jerusalem remembered in the days of her affliction. At least she had momentary pause. I sometimes wonder if anybody in the present-day Church of God has ever paused for 3 seconds. And of her miseries, all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old. She remembered it. When her people fell into the hand of the enemy, they remembered what they'd been given, God's kindness to them, the enormity of the blessings that were theirs. God, they remembered they had those things. But you think they were going to repent and go back? Oh, no. When her people fell into the hand of the enemy, and none did help her, the adversaries saw her and did mock at her Sabbaths. And you know, it is interesting that the mockery did not occur on the outside only, because one of the biggest problems encountered or experienced by the children of Israel and the children of Judah came from within. Where do you think you get the mockery today? Let me assure you, you are mocked daily almost, with respect to your belief on divorce and remarriage and on Pentecost. Oh, I have heard it a number of times, how they talk about that little group, you know, they won't change, they won't do this, and they won't do that, and so on. Now, they mock. They're driving the spear in. It's all right, let them go ahead. They kept it for 40 years. All right, next I want you to notice verse 10. The adversary, I wish I had time to read this whole first chapter. As a matter of fact, the whole of Lamentations is a beautiful, beautiful writing. And I think we'd better understand it. The adversary has spread out his hand upon all her pleasant things. The adversary went in and she spread out over all, and she took advantage of all the pleasant things. In other words, what we are saying is that God gave all the greatness to his people because of obedience. They were blessed beyond definition. But the adversaries didn't want to obey to reap the same thing. They wanted the advantages of the same things without doing or performing the act of obedience. So the blessings that Israel received as a result of obedience, the adversaries took over as a matter of exploitation. So even those who became the recipients of blessings can lose them to the adversaries, their own adversaries, if they do not remain faithful. Our own precise blessings we can lose if we do not follow in the paths which produce the right to those blessings. So the adversary has spread out his hand upon all her pleasant things, for she has seen that the heathen entered into her sanctuary, whom thou didst command that they should not enter into thy congregation. They came in. They took over. They had no right to it. All the implications involved in this one verse alone. Once again, time doesn't permit an exhaustive explanation. But don't give up your right to your blessings. You're going to lose them, I'll guarantee you, if you don't continue in that way that gives you right to them. And then your enemies are going to take over. They'll exploit you. They'll rob you of those rights. Next, I want you to notice verse 17. Zion spreads forth her hands, and there is none to comfort her. She went to the point of impasse, the point of no return. Zion spreads forth her hands, and there is none to comfort her. The Lord hath commanded concerning Jacob that his adversaries should be round about him. God no longer set up the hedge. God no longer protects. What he is also saying conversely is this, that if you remain faithful to God, your blessings are going to be protected. You are going to be protected. They're yours. There are going to be adversities and trials, yes, as God wills, but the blessings will never be taken from you if you are responsive to that stimuli. If you turn because of it. And remember, all adversity does not come because somebody has a whiplash taking an ounce of flesh or blood. Sometimes the strongest adversity is a temptation to go out and do that which your nature dictates. You'd like to just spill out your venom. Or you'd like to go out and do this thing or that thing that the law doesn't permit or allow. Remember, that's also adversity. Because your nature can whip you a whole lot more than other human beings can. So here was the problem. You see, these people weren't just beaten by bow and arrow, but they looked about and they saw all the customs of these Gentiles and they wanted to go out and do likewise. Not realizing that they were beaten more severely than if they had been destroyed by army, because they would not have lost their integrity had the army destroyed them. But they lost everything when their character changed. So remember, we can be tried more than one way. Continuing, what did he say? That his adversaries should be round about him. God permitted or allowed those adversaries to be there. Because of those weaknesses manifest, and because God was going to try them, to prove them, to know them. If they had done precisely what they should have done, they would have been faithful to the law of God, they would have withstood their own natural natures, and they would have overcome every physical nation on the face of this earth, and every nation would have been obedient to them. Every nation would have been obedient to them. Then if all nations had obeyed them and they had perfectly mastered their own nature, there would have been no further adversary stimuli. Wouldn't have existed. See, it would have been perfectly mastered or overcome. There would have been no other nation. They would have had them under perfect control, and they would have had their nature under subjugation. But rather, they subscribed to those stimuli. They wanted to be like these nations. Now what happened? Jerusalem, then, is as a menstruous woman among them. And what that means is not that it was a bad, bad thing to be a menstruous woman. What it meant was that she was in isolation by the will and the decree of God. So, what happened to Israel? The wife, she's in isolation. because of her defiance and her rebellion. All right, next, brethren. Let's turn to 2 Kings. Well, actually, we want to go into another point here. And I'm wondering if really I want to attempt to open up another particular point, because I think I'll just hold it and try to get directly into it and cover the next subtopic at the next time. I realize I'm taking a long, long time on this, but it is so varied, and I told you from the beginning that it was. It is so varied, and there are so many specifics to this matter of trial, adversity, and experience. And I think it is essential to exhaustively cover all of it, because it applies in so many different ways that I think it can be made interesting. I hope it is to you anyway. Interesting regardless of the amount of tapes that are involved. And because if you listen carefully, and if I do my part, you know, and spend the time to think issues through, there's plenty in there. And I don't think that it is dull material. It has not been dull to me at all, and I hope it never becomes dull to you. So I do not intend to hasten with it whatsoever. I want to take the time, and I want us to understand it, because the Bible is almost a full written book on human experience. And so what you're asking with respect to trials and tribulation and persecution is an understanding of the whole history recorded in this book.
Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal has just presented the number 21 tape in this series of vital and intense interest to every Christian. Your speaker has been Mr. Raymond Cole.